This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit theupsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody, or wherever you are in the world. Good morning. Huge news overnight. Larry Johnson predicted it on the channel a few days ago. We've seen the strikes on Iran, and we've just had China's response as well, has just been put out in the media. But I am live with retired Major General Dennis Leitch, and he has a lot of parallel beliefs as some of the other experts we've on, but I'll let him explain that himself. So huge thank you for coming on, Dennis. And first and foremost, when you woke up today and you saw this news, what was your initial reaction?
I couldn't believe it. I thought that it was premature to do it. And I think that my thought going into it was that we have an inexperienced, mercurial leader of the United States who has an inexperienced, sycophantic staff. And it could be a disaster.
So do you think that if Iran now attacks a U.S. military base or any other U.S. interest, this could just keep going up the escalation ladder?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, Winston Churchill said once the dogs of war are released, there's no control in them. And I think this is a prime example of it. I think that there are very little thought to what's next.
Yeah, so Trump is playing it, you know, that he's claiming to have obliterated the target and that this will now force Iran to come to the peace table. I mean, is that just an impossible to fulfill demand that is just going to lead to another round of war?
I think so. I think that why should the Iranians trust the Trump administration? I mean, you know, we had the JCPOA that was negotiated and slowed the program, if not ended it, but had inspectors in Iran and cooperation, and they walked away from it. Now we have a war that we sleepwalked into and in support of Israel.
Do you see any parallels here with how we sleepwalked into the Iraq war?
Absolutely. And Vietnam is the same thing. I mean, we have poor planning. And, I was hoping to, if we had a couple of weeks to write a op-ed that would have advocated for the Congress to be involved, but to have the debate around the going to war, taking steps against Iran, around the Powell Doctrine, the eight steps in the Powell Doctrine, which would have included a clear mission statement, an exit plan, a guarantee of support of the American people, a guarantee of support of allies. We had none of these things, and I would have included a plan to have the American people be involved. But Congress has abdicated its role completely. Article 1, Section 8 says that only Congress can declare war, and they've abdicated.
So I'll read you what the South China Morning Post has just published. China condemns U.S. attack on Iran's nuclear sites, calls for ceasefire. Beijing, China is condemning the U.S. airstrikes on Iranian nuclear facilities, saying that it is a serious violation of the U.N. Charter and heightens tensions in West Asia. Beijing also called on parties to the conflict, Israel in particular, to reach a ceasefire as soon as possible and to ensure the safety of civilians and start dialogue and negotiation. What do you read into this reaction from China?
I read that they're playing their cards very smart, as they have for the last 10 or 20 years. And I think that they see the United States walking into another dumb war and being played by Bibi Netanyahu. I mean, the Bibi Netanyahu would love to see the Iranians, the Iranian regime fall, but you can't do it without the United States. The United States is being sucked right into this. I've often asked audiences throughout the United States when I've spoken, what strategic advantage accrues to the United States as a result of our alliance with Israel? And they're dumbfounded. They don't know. I mean, it's a wagging the dog in spades.
So at this juncture, who do you think is more important to Iran, China, or Russia?
Both of them are. To Iran, I think both of them are. I think both of them play a role. But I think that one of the things that that we need to recognize is that Iran, North Korea, Russia, and China have a common enemy.
Yeah, and Brzezinski wrote in the Grand Chessboard that it was the alliance between Russia, China, and Iran that was the biggest threat to U.S. hegemony. So if we're trying to analyze the real reasons behind attacking Iran, what in your opinion, are they?
I don't know that we have them. I think we sleepwalked into it. We sleepwalked into it with a transactional leader in the United States who didn't use the tools of the National Security Council or any of the other tools available to him and reacted in a transactional way.
So I was looking at the announcement on X from Donald Trump, about the bombing, and I was looking at the comments below it this morning. I was reading some of them with the viewers, and people all over the world are just attacking him, even his own supporters. Some huge YouTubers who supported him, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, etc. His own voters, 19% are in favor. More than half are not in favor. What does this, for his future going forward, does it not bode well for him?
I don't think he cares. He doesn't have to stand for re-election. He doesn't have to do anything. And it's unlikely that he'd be impeached, and even less likely that he'd be convicted. So he has 3 years to do whatever he wants, and he's grifting billions of dollars as a result of his presidency, and he's gonna leave in 2028 and be richer than he ever was, and no chance of going to jail.
So the bombing of Iran, is it technically an impeachable act?
I don't know. I don't think it's relevant. I don't think it's relevant. It may be, but I don't think it is. But he's not going to be impeached. He's not going to be convicted. This is a Republican House and Senate that is subservient to him. They've proven it. Let's just look at what the Senate did during the confirmation hearings. I mean, this cast of characters that occupy the administration now, that lead the administration. No candidate would ever have nominated any one of them to be in the position they're in. But not only were they nominated, but they were all approved. They're all confirmed.
All right, viewers. So I'm with retired Major General Dennis Leitch. And if you've got any questions, please put them in the chat. Of course, we're discussing the news that's broken overnight. So Jane wants to know your thoughts on what's going on in Gaza. And is the entire world distracted now from Gaza by Iran?
I think it is. I think it is distracted to some extent, but I think the Gaza situation was just an abomination. I mean, if you look at Gaza, it's 71,000 children and older people are looking at the threat of starvation. Starvation in the 21st century in this world is just unbelievable. But the Israelis have said that they're going to take over Gaza, and I think that the Israelis are the biggest problem in the Middle East right now.
So in his speech, Trump said, you know, the Iranians are responsible for 1,000 terrorist deaths in the Middle East. And we looked at the war on terror and the collateral damage. Even the BBC, who it's probably an underestimate, they've said 5 million dead from bombs dropped during the war on terror. So who would that make the bigger terrorist?
Well, it depends who you're talking about. You know, remember the Taliban was freedom fighters when they were fighting the Russians, and now they're terrorists when they're fighting us. So it depends on where you stand. Depends on where you sit.
So you got a question from Nick. Do you think that Netanyahu and Trump could set the world on fire, and do they need to be stopped?
I think they're on the verge of setting it on fire. I don't know how they're stopped, but I think the only stop is China. But China's playing it really cool. They are they're very smart. They're very methodical. They're patient. And I think that China's just sitting there saying, "Okay, the United States, do what you want to do. Don't touch it." And they're telling their staffs and their military, "Don't touch a button. Don't touch a dial. Just let them go." And I think that I've said that by 2040, China will be the dominant power in the world.
You got a few people asking about your thoughts on surrounding countries getting involved, such as Turkey, Egypt, and Pakistan.
I think that Turkey and Egypt will probably get involved, but it depends. I don't know exactly how, but what their interest will be when they start sorting things out. Once the missiles and rockets start falling, it changes. Oftentimes, the alliances change.
What about Pakistan with their nuclear weapons?
Pakistan, I think, is really playing it cool. They're very concerned with India, of course. And I thought they were just brilliant the other day when they nominated Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. Boy, talk about sucking up! I mean, they're doing it in spades. I mean, they're world class.
Oh, wow. So Anne Marie wants to know, what is your biggest fear if the situation continues to escalate?
Oh, that it goes nuclear. I think that the possibility of a nuclear exchange somewhere along the line is very real, and I think that's the greatest fear I have.
So would that be localized nuclear weapons being dropped, justified by trying to get, you know, even deeper into the ground? Or are you talking an escalation of nukes going off throughout the world?
I think that the localized nuclear exchange is possible. I mean, but I think that if the war expands and you get the United States and China involved, there have been a number of simulations done in the United States. I think that of the 14 I'm aware of, 11 have ended in nuclear exchange. You know, you may hit a point where there's a standoff, and people say, well, why do we have these nukes? And that's my biggest fear.
Question from Panther. Dennis, my grandfather was also a high-ranking officer in the U.S. Armed Forces, although a full bird. He got passed up for brigadier twice. How did you get so high being such a decent person?
I appreciate the assessment of being a decent person, but I've changed a bit. I've been retired for 16 years, so I've had a chance to sit back and assess U.S. policy more thoroughly. And you know, when you're on active duty and you're in the midst of things, you don't get a chance to think much. But after 16 years, I've had a chance to think, and I was probably a bit of a strange bird when I was serving, but I've since become more contemplative, and I think that the 16 years have allowed me to mellow a bit.
So, Disco, did you see the interview with Putin where he said Russia has no plans to touch Israel as there are 2 million Russian-speaking Israelis?
I didn't see it, but I don't know why Putin would touch Israel. I mean, it's outside of his scope of what he wants to accomplish right now. As I understand it, he wants to control his borders and control the country and build a greater Russia. And Israel does not stand in the way of that. And I think Putin would be smart to not get involved.
Yeah, I think what's more pertinent from what Putin has said recently was he was talking about Iran and how they offered him more military protection, but Iran declined it. Did you see that part of his speeches?
Yes, but you know, you have to take everything Putin says with a grain of salt, as you do everything Trump says and everything almost anyone says who's in a position of power.
Sky wants to know, is there a chance the Cyprus military bases could be a target in the coming days?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I see. If I were a U.S. soldier or a sailor, airman, marine in anywhere in the Middle East, I'd stay close to the bomb shelters.
I know there's a lot of Brits in Dubai and the United Arab Emirates right now. So I imagine if the bases that out that way are deemed enabling the Americans, they could be targets as well.
Absolutely.
So Maria wants to know, why is it okay for Russia, China, and North Korea to have nukes?
I don't know. Who gets to decide who should have nukes? I mean, the only country in the war in the history of the world of nuclear power to use them in war is the United States. So what makes us the arbiter of who should have them? Who should have them at all? I mean, I think it'd be interesting. What if the Iranians said, okay, we'll give up our nuclear program if Israel will give up their nukes? I mean, who made us the arbiter of what's right? We're the only ones there to have used a nuclear weapon in the history of nuclear weapons. And we're going to arbitrate who's got the right to have them?
And doesn't America constantly invading countries just incentivize these countries to get nuclear bombs all the faster, because that's the only thing that's going to stop America from coming in?
I don't know. There's a history of the nuclear shield that keeps America at bay. But I think that we've demonstrated that we're reluctant to take on a country that has nukes.
What are your thoughts on the domes at this point, iron and golden?
Pardon me?
What are your thoughts on the Iron Dome and the Golden Dome?
Oh, geez. I think it's a joke. I mean, we have a Golden Dome. We have a Golden Dome called the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean in Mexico and China and Canada. We have more protection than any country in the world. But to build that dome and have it be operational is huge expense. And the country, people don't realize the country's already $35 trillion in debt and running $2 trillion deficits every year. We just don't have the money. How are you going to do that?
And that debt's being held up by the Ponzi scheme called the US dollar, and the BRICS countries were threatening that. So do you think that's part of demonizing Iran, is the threat to the dollar as well?
I don't think we're that sophisticated. I don't think anybody in the administration today is that sophisticated in taking in connecting those two dots.
All right. So, question from Colonel PH, sir: do you think that Israel will go for the Samson option?
What's the Samson option?
So I don't want to misquote this. Let me just get this technically correct. Samson option, meaning, so it's whereby Israel, the Samson option of the book title refers to the nuclear strategy whereby Israel would launch a massive nuclear retaliatory strike if the state itself was being overrun, just as the biblical figure Samson is said to have pushed apart the pillars of a Philistine temple, bringing down the roof and killing himself.
Oh yeah, I think that Israel, especially with Bibi Netanyahu at the head, would would do that. But I think that we're a long way from that.
And wouldn't that pollute like the entire world?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Once the first nuke is launched, I mean, it's all over. You know, Winston Churchill said that all these nukes have, after the 10th one, all you're doing is making the rubble bounce.
So people are asking about the strait, whether that's going to be closed. Iran's threat on Strait of Hormuz could affect global oil supplies. There's all kinds of debate what's going to happen there. What do you think could happen there?
Well, I think that Iran will try to close the Straits of Hormuz, and it'll cause the oil price to jump, and that's going to have consequences in the United States because it's going to increase costs, increase inflation, and complicate the tariff fiasco that's already plaguing the Trump administration. And it'll also influence prices and inflation, and the farmers will have difficulty transporting their goods and serving foreign markets. So yeah, there's going to be a big problem there.
Yeah, they're saying that oil prices are expected to soar after U.S. attacks Iran facilities. Oil futures may surge as traders brace for Iran's response. Brent crude could hit as high as 130 if supply disruptions escalate throughout the region. Wow, that would really destabilize the global economy, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's the global economy is already destabilized to some extent by the U.S. debt, the U.S. dollar, and the tariff fiasco.
So Anne-Marie is asking, Dennis, how would you de-escalate the situation right now if you were in charge?
Wow. I don't know. I think that it's gone too far to de-escalate. I think the thing that that we can do now is just try to not see it escalate anymore. But I don't think you can de-escalate effectively at this point. I think that we've gone too far. I think that the Israelis are seeing a huge opportunity now, and they're not going to let go of it. They're Bibi Netanyahu is a war criminal who's looking at international war crimes and also legal issues within Israel itself. He still has to answer for the October fiasco in 2 years ago when the 1,200 Israelis died, and he hasn't answered that yet. So he's got a lot on his plate that would go badly if he gets out of power.
So do you think it's in Bibi's interest then that Iran retaliates and, you know, I hate to say it, but there's as much damage as possible to American interests. And if Americans do die, heaven forbid, that will all play into Bibi's hands?
Absolutely. 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 But Bibi needs to see a complete or at least an espoused or a claim to be able to make a credible claim that the Iran regime has turned over and it no longer represents an existential threat to Israel.
So Nick is asking, can Russia and China intervene to stop this madness without getting militarily involved?
I don't know. I think that China can. I think Russia doesn't have the credibility with the Americans to do it, but I think China can. I think China has the neutrality, or at least the essence of neutrality around the aura of neutrality, and they could, but I don't know that they can even stop it. Yeah, the big mover here is Israel. I mean, Israel is playing this administration like a harp, and they're falling right for it.
So, question from Seeking: do you agree that Iran had many chances for peace, but were taking the West for fools?
Well, I don't know that we're taking the West for fools, but another chance for peace. But, you know, when you look around, you know, most Americans, if you ask most Americans in the, or you're probably Brits, I don't know. If you ask most in the West, what happened in 1953 in Iran? You get his shoulders are shrugged. But every Iranian school child knows what happened. The United States installed a dictator more brutal than Saddam Hussein, support him for 30 years, and then there was a change in government. But we have a history of brutality toward the Iranians, and we forget what went on. We forget that we had the JCPOA in place. We walked away from it. So you know, we demonize the Iranians, but the United States is pretty guilty too. You can't overlook what happened in 1953. We supported that regime for almost 30 years.
Yeah, the Shah of Iran, and seeking. I'll just add a little bit to that as well. You know, they told us they were going into Iraq because he had weapons of mass destruction, and it was an evil regime, and it was for women's rights and human rights and all this stuff. Yet America has been in bed with Saudi Arabia for how long? You could go way back to Prescott Bush, money laundering for the Nazis. You know, these globalists have no qualms about supporting regimes that do the most wicked things in the world. So are we supposed to really believe that all of a sudden they give a crap about the people of Iran and any injustices happening there? I don't think so. What do you think about that, Dennis?
You know, we you know, all countries write their own history, and you know, Noam Chomsky said years ago that you know, all countries write their own history, and Chomsky remains a brilliant thinker. But you know, we see it, and you know, we go back in America, even to the American Indians. You know, we say that we liberated the West and all that. We slaughtered Indians. We subject them. You know, I said once that the American imperialism is dominant, and it's based on genocide, slavery, and intergenerational theft. I was not invited back to speak to that group again. I mean, when you look at it, we have a history of that sort of thing. But all countries do. The only thing is, we're more powerful than most.
You got a lot of questions coming in. Thanks, viewers, for keeping all of these questions coming in. I'm just trying to see which one is a good one to go with next. So people are asking, why did Trump say he was giving Iran 2 weeks to come to the table and have a peace deal?
I don't know. I think it was the deception on the part of the administration and his to put the Congress and the allies at rest for a little while. And maybe the intent was to go ahead quickly all the whole time. I mean, it preempted the rule of Congress. And I think that's a shame.
Question from Seeking. Why would a president go through Congress when he had the right to use executive order when there is an imminent threat?
Well, the question is, was there an imminent threat? Was there an imminent threat to the United States or to the to its allies? I don't know. You know, you had the director of national intelligence say that it wasn't. It wasn't a direct threat. Of course, she changed her mind after she was directed to, probably by Trump. But you know, it's a tough thing. But you know, there's a lot to be said for Congress getting involved. I mean, or having a debate. I mean, I go back to the point I made before. Where's the debate? Where's the history? Where's the experience in making a decision like this? You make a decision like this, and somebody says, "Okay, fine, we can do it. It's transactional." But what's going to happen next week? What's going to happen next week? How outraged will the United States be if there's an attack on a base in the Middle East or in the homeland? I mean, there's no reason to believe that there aren't cells of terrorists in the United States that that could be activated. I mean, we're gonna get all righteous and indignant at the next attack on the United States, but that's what happens.
Yeah, it seems to me that whenever they want to invade someone, they just put their hands in the white rabbit hat and pull out an imminent threat time and time again. It just seems to happen. SSRI, where is the Iranian Air Force? Is it in hiding, storage for now, or has it been destroyed?
I don't know. It's hard to tell right now. I mean, I've not heard anything about a battle damage assessment of the Iranian Air Force, and it may very well be that it's in hiding or in abeyance, but I don't know. I don't know that it's been destroyed or it's. I've not heard anything with regard to the Iranian Air Force.
I think they've been waiting for this for so long that they've taken measures to protect certain interests. So next question is about boots on the ground and conscription. A few people are asking whether we'll see UK, US troops out there now and conscription possibly.
Boy, we're dealing with my wheelhouse. In 2013, I wrote a book entitled Skin in the Game, Poor Kids and Patriots, which I said that the all-volunteer force would not work. And the United States, we're seeing part of it now. And we saw a couple of years of really thin recruitment and huge expense. And I said that now, you know, when we see it going to war, for instance, if ground troops are required anywhere, and you know, Iran is three times the size of Iraq, and is a much more potent military force than Iraq was. You know, when you think about it, if we were to go to war with China today, which is a possibility as we talked about the war expanding, how many people would rush to the recruiting station in England or the United States to go someplace to fight a war where they couldn't even find it? Most people can't find Taiwan on a map.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing. In the United States, we have polls that are done every 6 months by the government. It says the question is why do people not join? And the principal reason that people don't join the military today in the United States is that they're afraid of being killed, they're afraid of being maimed, and they're afraid of leaving home. So if those are the three things that during peacetime keep people from joining, what would happen during a war? I mean, the fact is that the United States cannot muster a war footing in terms of and strengths. And it's not going to get any better. The other thing is that two other points that I'd point out is that the United States lacks the industrial base to fight a prolonged war against anybody, particularly China. But we don't have the shipbuilding capability. We don't have the munitions capability. We don't have the access to rare earth minerals that are required in many of our sophisticated weapons. And we're $35 trillion in debt. I said once in an open forum when I was still serving that we can't go to war with China because they won't loan us the money. I mean, that was a kind of snarky comment, but we need to be realistic about this. I mean, people don't want to join the military today to go to war, and we're not going to force them. I think conscription would be an interesting thing in the United States and in England. But I think that there'd be an uproar that would be deafening. And the thing is, the United States, at least, is you know, if you look at the military today, it's made up of people from the third and fourth socioeconomic quintile. The first socioeconomic quintile doesn't participate. You know, if we go to war with in Iraq and over Iran, I wonder whether Trump's two sons, who are of military service age, will join. Don Jr. is too old, but Eric and his youngest son, 19, are both military age. I wonder if they'll join.
Which begs the question then, when the U.S. went to war with Iraq, did the Bush and Cheneys of the world lead the example with their own fine military records, motivating people to sign up?
No. Matter of fact, Cheney was arrogant about it. He said he had better alternatives. At least Bush was a pilot in the National Guard. He did something, but you know, it's a sad case. It's a sad case when you look at the signatories to the American Declaration of Independence. There were 56. Virtually all of them fought in the war, and many of them paid huge price for their service in the war. But you know, today we don't do that.
We have, yeah.
I characterize the United States today as having an alligator ass and a chipmunk, an alligator mouth and a chipmunk ass.
And here in the UK, people are reluctant to sacrifice their lives for the wishes of Keir Starmer. He's the most despised Prime Minister in the history of polls. And people are disgusted by him. So Sophie wants to know, what does this attack on Iran mean for us?
Well, it means that we'll pay the price for an election of a criminal who is a proven sociopath and inexperienced administration that as condoning this war and supporting it, but the American people pay a huge price, I think, in terms of soft power, in terms of blood and treasure.
Next question is from Agent Orange. Major General is correct. No one will be held accountable. I've always asked, why don't commanders run for president? Who else has more experience and a degree?
Well, I think we have seen people run for president. We've seen a number of in previous centuries, in the 19th and the 18th century, we had a number of former generals run for president. But I think that the other thing is that sometimes the current group of generals and admirals is overstated too. I think the heroism is at the E5 and the O3 level, not at the general officer level today.
Agent Orange was just asking also, what branch were you?
Army.
Okay. Seeking is back with, do you agree that in order to have peace, you need to be prepared to go to war?
Yes, but you need to go to war only if diplomacy and every other means to achieve your ends is satisfied. You don't go to war for specious reasons, and you have a plan. You have a clear mission. You have an exit plan. You have the support of the people. You have support of the allies, and we have none of that in most of the wars.
Eric wants to know if these bombings will cause Iran to back down.
I doubt it. I think that they can't back down now. They back down now, they'll lose control of their country, and I think that they're committed to proceeding with a response of some sort over the next several weeks or months. You know, I have to compliment your audience. They have some good questions.
Yeah, they're really tuned in. You know, thanks to guests like Scott Ritter has been educating us. So, John, is Iran a far more capable enemy than Afghanistan?
Oh, yes, yes. Afghanistan was the Taliban I don't think there's any comparison between the two of them as enemies and the way they'll fight wars and the resources each country has.
Which means this should play out much differently from Afghanistan and Iraq.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see. Maria, why do you think Trump did this if he said no new wars and his base is against what he just did? So didn't you answer earlier on it was Israel?
Well, trying to get into Donald Trump's head is like going into Alice in Wonderland. I mean, I don't know why he did it. I don't know why he does with some of the things he does. I mean, let's face it. I mean, he has made a number of wild decisions. I mean, just think what he's done domestically here. He's in the last several months, he's upset the entire world in terms of economics with the tariffs that every economist in the world has said are wrong. He's been wrong about it. He's upset the world in terms of the JCPOA. He's vacillated with regard to NATO. I mean, the guy is mercurial at best, and that's the thing that you can't have at that level. You have to have some stability and some predictability, and he majors in chaos.
So Graciela is wondering whether you've heard anything about the Greek army and navy getting ready.
I haven't heard anything about the Greeks getting involved. I don't know what the capability, what the real capability of the Greek military is today. I think it's not all that great in comparison to Egypt or Turkey or other countries in the area.
Does the USA have some kind of weapon that no one knows about because it has been developed in underground bases?
Well, if no one knows about it and I knew and I told you, I'd have to kill you. But I don't know. I think that we may have something, but if we did, we'd use it. We wouldn't have used the bunker buster that we had. That has been in existence for a number of years. I think the weapons development is ongoing and wouldn't be surprised if we're trying to get something that would work better, but I don't know of anything. And if I did know, I couldn't tell you.
So has Barack Obama commented on the action taken? Apparently his administration sent money to Iran over the years, which may have been used to fund weapons.
I don't know that Obama has said anything about it, but If the reference here is that the return of the money that the U.S. government froze and returned to Iran that was theirs anyway, I don't know whether they used it to advance weapons or advance their support of Hezbollah or the Houthis or whatever, but it was their choice what they did with the money. I mean, every country operates in their own best interest.
Morgan wants to know, will the UK get involved?
I don't know. They've been sucked into U.S. Involvement in the past. And they actually, as I know, they've taken pride in being a kind of tag-along puppy in U.S. adventures. But I think that now there may be a break. I wouldn't be surprised that Europe and England and a number of other countries say, that's okay, we'll let you go in the United States. You just go ahead, which we saw in the beginning of the Iraq War. I mean, a number of countries said, we're not going to support the United States in this.
But with Ukraine, it seems that Starmer just loves sending money to Zelensky while letting the veterans be homeless on the streets of London. And it's insane. It seems like they always have money for war here, but not for the domestic people. It's outrageous. All right, so next question is from SSRI. Does Iran not fully trust Russia for support because they have refused military support in this war? I think what SSRI might mean is a reference to what, you know, the agreement that Iran declined with Russia, perhaps. I think it's too early to say about support from Russia coming in now because this is all just happening real time.
Yeah, I think that the next week we'll get a better feel for these sort of things and see where people line up and with whom. Let's face it, the dynamic has changed dramatically in the last 24 hours.
So, Cassandra, is the U.S. at risk now for terrorist attacks on the mainland and other attacks?
Absolutely.
And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, Cassandra, because they bomb the crap out of these countries, so pretending to liberate the people. But actually, you know, if a bomb landed on my house and my family's blood and guts are on the wall, first thing I'm going to do is sign up to attack the enemy. And then when I attack the enemy, what are they going to do? Call me a terrorist and just use that to justify further attacks? And that's how this thing just becomes a self-fulfilling circle that never bloody ends. But it's a constant money go-round, isn't it, for the vested interests of the military-industrial complex, perpetual war?
Absolutely, absolutely. The military-industrial complex in the United States is just so powerful. We're at the Eisenhower Media Network. We announced last week in Washington, D.C., under the leadership of Ben Cohen, that we're going to have the up-in-arms project to reduce the military budget. You know, if you look at the military budget of the United States, it's 10 times larger. It's larger than the next 10 countries in the world combined. And the fact of the matter is that we haven't won a war. We've won one war since World War II. We tied in Korea. We lost Vietnam. We won the first Gulf War. We lost in Iraq and we lost in Afghanistan. So here you have if you had a sports analogy, you'd say, here's the coach who has a 1-3-1 record. Who keeps his job in that thing? But you know, we keep pumping money into this giant self-licking ice cream cone called the military-industrial complex, and we just give more money. And the thing is, the Pentagon can't even pass an audit. They can't even tell us where the money went. They're the only institution in the United States government that has not passed an audit. But yet we give more money. It'd be like sending my kids to college and give them stipend at the beginning of the month. I give them a couple $100 at the beginning of the month. And the second day of the month, they say, Dad, I need more money. I say, what'd you do with the money I gave you yesterday? He said, I don't know, but I give them more. We're nuts.
Do you think that's one of the reasons Elon got upset? Because all the money he was saving was just getting sucked into the military industrial complex?
I don't know. I don't know that Elon was saving any money. I think that that was a ruse. I haven't seen any receipts so far. I mean, the only thing that he's done is cut the workforce, and that's going to pay huge consequences for the American people in terms of being served. I mean, Elon started during the campaign. He said he was going to save $2 trillion. Then once Trump was elected, he said he's going to save $1 trillion. Then he said he's going to save $0.5 trillion. And I think that the last I saw, it's like $200 billion.
So Mike's pointing out there's over 1 million Iranians in the U.S. Watch for the backlash. And the other thing is, you know, we've got an immigration crisis here, and bombing the poorest countries in the world and bombing Iran is what's one of the root causes of the people wanting to leave their countries to somewhere that's not getting bombed. So these politicians that are saying they're stopping all of this migration, they're creating it in the first place, don't you think, Dennis?
Well, yeah. There's, nobody thinks about any consequence. They think about the transactional effects of what's going to happen. And the backlash of the American Iranians will be limited. But I think that you will see the possibility. I see a distinct possibility of terrorist cells existing in the United States that could be operational.
And my friend Emil is an Iranian-American, and he's been messaging me viewers, and I hope to get him on the channel soon and get his perspective. Question from Disco: how can or would the military-industrial complex ever be defunded? Could it be done? It's never-ending.
Well, it could be defunded, but it's going to require some courage, and I think it could be defunded as part of a broader concern right now. I think that I've had discussion with my colleagues at the Eisenhower Media Network with regard to how we implement the up-in-arms program that we initiated last week. And I think that there are a number of people inside and outside the government right now who are concerned about the debt. I think it's part of the debt. You have to look at the defense budget. The defense budget is more than $1 trillion a year when you think about it. I mean, I ask people in the United States, audiences in the United States, is the VA part of the VA budget part of the defense budget? So, gee, I don't know, but it's not. It's $400 billion a year now, $400 billion. So you take the $400 billion and the $800 billion that they have in the defense budget, have $1.2 trillion. And that's a huge, that's a big piece of this. The U.S. budget is a very small part of it is discretionary. So I think that we'll have an opportunity to address it. There are powerful forces. I mean, and it's a giant self-licking ice cream cone because, the senior uniformed bureaucrats in the Pentagon cater to the arms merchants in the United States. They in turn give campaign contributions to the members of this House and Senate Armed Services Committee. And the defense contractors give post-retirement employment to senior admirals and generals. So it's a giant self-licking ice cream cone that needs to be aborted. But I think there are a number of people like Ray Dalio and others in the United States who are outside the government, and even Warren Buffett, who will take this on.
Anne Marie wants to know, in your opinion, who is the most peaceful and just U.S. president, the one you most admire?
Maybe Teddy Roosevelt.
And why?
I think he had a sense of justice that powerful, but I think that this idea of justice, I'm a practicing Stoic, and the Stoics talk about four principles of courage, wisdom, temperance, and justice. And I don't think you find that in many people in the United States today who occupy positions of power.
Indeed. I don't think they've got a copy of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations in their backpacks either.
No.
So what about Kennedy then? Because Kennedy tried to assert his power over military operations and intelligence operations, and look what happened to him.
Yeah, I think that you have to take a look at presidents. That was a tough question. That was a very tough question. But I think that it comes down to a matter of character. And for me, it comes down to a matter of character. And I view the leaders in the context of people like Marcus Aurelius and Seneca and even modern people like James Stockdale, for instance. I think that most presidencies are dictated by powers and sources and events outside their power, their own power, and they're either strapped to a rocket ship or they're doomed to failure. But if you talk about decency, you talk about people like Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was a very decent man, but he had a failed presidency by most historians' assessments.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Epictetus as well. So Sky is asking, do you think the next round of bombings will be justified by them saying they didn't quite locate the plutonium yet?
I don't know what will justify it, but it's the whole thing is a creative opportunity for the public affairs people at the Pentagon to go crazy. I mean, you can't. I don't know what the justification will be, but it'll be there. But and 50% of the United States will buy it, and 50% won't.
I think Eric's might be referencing the two Chinese ships in the area. The question is, does China have backroom technology that could disable or blow up the U.S. equipment if we go at it with them?
Oh, yeah, they have a number of things. You know, the thing you have to realize is that if we go to war with China, probably fought in the South China Sea and 7,000 miles away from the base of the United States, and that puts us at a distinct disadvantage. But there was a report about a month ago or 2 months ago where Hexas said that China had the ability to sink most of our aircraft carriers. And, you know, the thing is, you know, if you look at the American people and you see an aircraft carrier go sink to the bottom of the South China Sea or the Straits of Hormuz, and 5,000 sailors bobbing around in the water, and we can't do anything about it because we don't have air superiority to rescue them, and the American people are going to go batshit.
Will the Persian Gulf be shut down?
I think so. I would not be surprised if it's not, at least for a period of time. I think the Iranians have demonstrated that they can strangle the Straits of Hormuz, and it's a perfect naval operation. I mean, it's easy for them to do, and very difficult for us to liberate it, to open it.
Where is the Israeli Air Force? W is asking.
I don't know. I think they played some role in this, but I think that they have been kind of subdued. I think the other thing is too that you have to look at the Israeli Defense Force. I mean, the Israelis have been activating their reservists for years now, and they're fatigued. They're fatigued. Many of the pilots have resisted active service. The Israeli economy, as a result of this, and they have a huge number of people on active duty. And the Israeli Defense Force are primarily a civilian defense force that is drawn from about 8 or 9 million people. So it's a tough thing for them to continue to operate.
Question from Jane: is Diego Garcia still in U.S.-UK control, or was it given away to Mauritius by Starmer?
I think that, I don't know. I think that Diego Garcia is still in U.S. UK control. To the best of my knowledge, it is.
Would you recommend taking overseas trips in the next 6 months? This is getting very frightening.
I certainly wouldn't go to anywhere in the Middle East. I mean, if you want to go to Europe, we're going to take a vacation, but we've decided to go stay in the United States this year. We'll be leaving next week.
Do most Westerners not understand war?
Oh, I think so. I wrote in my book that the most controversial line I had in my book that I wrote in 2013 was that most Americans look at the military in general and the way we man the force in particular through a lens of fear, apathy, ignorance, and guilt. Fear, apathy, ignorance, and guilt.
Wow. And can you just tell the people where they can get your book?
I believe it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble now.
All right, we'll get the Amazon link for you folks in the description box if you're watching this on replay. We're at the hour with Dennis right now, and huge thank you for spending this time with us. Is there anything you would like to say in conclusion to the viewers, Dennis?
No, only that I thought that the questions were excellent, and I was challenged by them, and I applaud you and your audience for their depth and their sophistication. I enjoyed it. It's a good hour.
We really appreciate you coming on and spending this time with us, and good luck to you, sir. Cheers.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for all of your questions, folks. I'll get the link to Dennis's book put in the description box shortly. And you really helped shape it with all of those great questions. And a lot of people are asking that, you know, understandably, that you're worried about what's going to happen in your own countries. So I believe it's going to get much worse. I think there's a huge probability of this just complete escalation here. And if you've got almost 100 million people in Iran, you know, lots of them are going to flee to around the world, which is going to cause the immigration crisis to get worse. If people in Iran are losing loved ones to Western bombs, then they are going to turn around and try and attack us in our home countries. So, you know, what we call terrorism is going to get worse. But we've got to look at the root causes of this. It's our own government's blowback from their own evil actions just to make the military-industrial complex and all of these other vested interests that Dennis talked about so that they can profiteer. They don't give a hoot about who's dying on these battlefields, over a million dead in Ukraine. They don't care because it's not their sons and daughters getting sent to war. It's our young people getting sacrificed for the likes of Keir Starmer and BlackRock and Palantir and Raytheon and all these other parasitic entities. So anyway, I think Dennis was really impressed with how clued in all y'all are on this channel, by the caliber of your questions, etc. And I really appreciate you sending those in. Emil's been messaging me. He's my Iranian-American friend. And he's got his own perspective about this. He's fully aware of the conspiracies of the globalists and the neocons. So I think it will be fascinating to get Emil on as well. So put a one in the chat if you want us to get Emil on. I'll read the latest message that he sent to me. Put a two in the chat. Ryan Dawson just sent me a message as well. Last show I was on, I said they would bomb Yemen first, and then there would be a war with Iran. So he's been 100% on that perfect record. And he's now asking me if I've seen Hegseth's speech. I'm going to get on that next. Emil has said that my dad worked for the Savak Aka, the Iranian secret police. I immigrated to the U.S. through Tehran. I would be the right person to ask some questions. So, yeah, we need to get the perspective of someone whose roots are out of Iran on the show as well. But thank you for tuning in, everyone. And I did an hour earlier today on this. We've now got our World War III playlist in the description box with all of our great guests, such as Dennis. So thanks for tuning in. I will see some of you in the next show. Take care wherever you are.